EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind of it?
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody at above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's American 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
County dispatch. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. Hello and welcome to the show, everyone, wherever in the world you are listening from today. We are joined this episode by Rich from the UK, sharing his paranormal experiences and encounters with his guardian angel that may just have saved his life while he was driving home from work late one night. But first, if you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to www.patreon.com/UFO Chronicles Podcast. You can also find a link in the description of this episode below. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show. Welcome to the show, Rich.
Hiya, Nick. It's great to be here. Thank you very much for having me on.
Thank you for coming on and sharing your experience tonight. Calling from the UK.
Yes, I'm in Chesterfield in Derbyshire.
Now, your encounter was what you believe to have been a guardian angel. Would you like to start at the beginning for our listeners, please, sir?
Yes, I certainly will, yeah. I'll just start with a little bit of a backstory before I go into my main story regarding the guardian angel. I suppose it really starts... Oh, right back, 1970-71, with me granddad, my dad's dad. He was a grand chap. We were really close, me and my granddad. And he always used to tell me, I mean, back then I'd be only 7-8 years old. And he was a big reader, and he used to love stories like Jack the Ripper and all these murderers in London and all this kind of stuff. But he was fascinated by ghosts and spirits and scary stories, if you will. And, okay, he didn't used to be trying to scare me to death at 7-year-old, but he used to tell you some strange stories that even back then used to sort of make your mind wonder, you know, what was happening. But he always used to say that he got a guardian angel. And I remember quizzing him, a guardian angel, what's this all about, Grandad? He says, You've got a guardian angel. He says, you're only a young lad. He says, but you'll find out as you get old. There might be a time, whatever, when your guardian angel will show themselves and you'll know who they are. So I questioned him and I says, well, what's your guardian angel? Who's your guardian angel? And he says, my guardian angel is an Indian, a native red Indian. And he says, he's a Navajo Indian. Well, that meant nothing to me whatsoever. The only Indians I'd seen were watching cowboy films back then, or maybe I Chaparral with the American TV show with Apache Indians and whatnot. And to me, they were always the baddies. But obviously, you don't pick your guardian angels; they pick you. And well, that's what That's what he said. So it always intrigued me, this question of guardian angels. So I think it's always been something that's been in my head. Well, I'll get onto my story regarding guardian angels in just a second. But when he'd be telling me these things, my dad always used to say, "Oh, well, behave. There's no such thing as ghosts and spirits. Scare lad to death." And then he used to say, "Don't listen to your granddad. There's nothing like that." Anyway, unbeknownst to me, my granddad had said to my dad, obviously I didn't know all this, I was still only a child, but he'd said to me, to my dad, he says, "My time will come before yours." He says, "And when my time comes and I've gone," he says, "I'll prove to you that there's ghosts and spirits." He says, "You mark my words." So that was that. But I say, I didn't know anything about that at the time because I was only a kid. But years and years and years later, I'm jumping forward to, you know, I've been in my 20s, even maybe going up to 30. Me and my dad we started going out for a pint on a Thursday night, a bit of a quiz night in local pub, and it became a bit of a regular thing. And my dad told me this story. My granddad had, obviously, he passed away in 1976, my granddad had died. And now I'm jumping forward into 80s, so it's a long time after he'd died. And this one particular night, how we got onto the subject of ghosts or spirits or whatever, I have no clue, because my dad, like I say, he had no interest in anything like, didn't believe in ghosts, didn't believe in UFOs or anything paranormal or anything. This life's fit living and that's it. That was his thing. Or so I thought. We got talking this particular night, and he just happened to tell me this story. And I couldn't believe what I was hearing coming from my dad, who, like I say, he had no interest in ghosts whatsoever. But apparently, when my granddad died, like I say, it was 76, and I know it was February, it was around about Valentine's time, so around mid-February time when he died. Later on that year, so we're jumping forward into summer, June, July time. Now, back in them days, in mid-70s, it were a bit, we didn't come from a very rich household and it were all a bit make do and mend and whatnot. This guy at work who worked with my dad, they were having a new three-piece suite, a new sofa and whatnot. And he just happened to mention in office at work, he says, "If anybody wants this sofa I'm throwing out," he says, "there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. It's got a good frame on it, a wooden frame, all springs are fine and everything. It just needs reupholstering and maybe, you know, get some new cushions and whatnot." So my dad, not wanting to miss out on opportunity, and seeing as how our three-piece suite and our sofa had seen better days, he says, "I'll have that. Don't take that to recycling place or Skip or whatever." He says, "Drop it off at our house I'll do it up. I'll revamp it." So this guy did. A week or so later, he dropped this sofa off. And my dad, he got a friend who lived. He got a market stall on Chesterfield Market. And anybody who lives around this area will know. Back in the 70s and 80s, it was one of the biggest open air markets there were. Not just in this area, in all of North England, it's a really big market. It's still there now in Market Square, but it's nothing compared with what it used to be back then, but I suppose that's how times have changed. But anyway, like I say, he got this friend and he got a market stall, and he sold cloth and stuff for upholstering furniture and all the little tacks and doing that. And he also sold sheets of foam rubber that he could make cushions and whatnot with. Now, this guy, I can't remember his name. I do believe it was something like Derek or whatever, but this Derek and my dad, They've been friends going right back through school and everything, and he also knew, obviously, in and out of one another's houses as you were back in them days. He knew my granddad very well as well, because they were always round either at my dad's or my dad would be round at his house. Anyway, like this particular Saturday, my dad had gone into town to buy this material and this foam rubber for doing these, to renovate this sofa. And sure enough, he found him at market, and hey, my dad's name was Dennis, and of course this Derek said, "Oh, Dennis, that's lovely to see you." He says, "I can't believe this." He says, "It's got to be maybe 3 or 4 years since last time I saw you to speak to." He says, and Of all things, he says, seeing you this week, he says, and last week I saw your dad. And my dad says, what do you mean you saw my dad? He says, he stood there exactly where you are. He says, I had a real good conversation with me. He was telling me all about how he'd moved out to Chesterfield, and him and your mum had got an old people's flat now up in Newbold. Well, Newbold's a little village. In fact, it's where we lived. It's 2 or 3 miles outside Chesterfield. Of course, my dad says, well, I'm sorry, Derek, but you can't have spoke to my dad. He says, Dennis, I'm telling you, it's still there where you were. He says, that's what I'm saying here. Space for a week, I've seen your dad, and now you. I'm not seen pair on you for must be 4 years. My dad says, no, Derek, you can't have. He says, I'm sorry. He says, but we lost him back in February. He's passed away. And my dad says, the colour just drained from this Derek's face. He says, oh, sorry, Dennis, I didn't realise. Oh, I must have been mistaken then. So he says, well, yeah, you must have. Anyway, he made his purchase and he bought this material and some film rubber and whatnot and headed back home. Of course, when he gets home, he's telling my mum all the story about what this Derek had said. And of course, my mum's saying, well, he must have got it wrong. It must have been somebody who looked like your dad or whatever. So they passed it off as that. Well, it weren't till sort of later on that night or maybe the following day, my dad's thinking, nah, this is not right. Okay, I know everybody says, you know, they have a doppelganger who's spitting image on him or whatnot, but he says, this guy's telling me that he spoke to me, Dad. Not only that, he's telling him that he's moved from Chesterfield and he's moved to an old age pensioner's flat at Newbold, which is absolutely correct. That's exactly what he'd done a couple of years before he passed away. So it really, and this had troubled me, Dad, unbeknownst to me. This is coming out, say, all these years later. And my dad said to me, he says, you know where I've always said there's nothing, you know, to afterlife or and all these things. He says, but even after all these years, I still think about what this Derek had said and, you know, who on earth he did see. If it weren't, you know, my granddad, who on earth was it? And how did this person know all this information? It's very, very strange, very strange. So maybe that was the way of my granddad proving to my dad that there is an afterlife or whatnot, rather than jumping out at him in round a dark corner or whatever and scaring him to death. He's done it this way. I mean, I don't know. Who knows? But that's an absolute true story that my dad told me, and say, all these years after losing my granddad. So very strange. But anyway, so that's that. Anyway, moving on now, this is the main reason I contacted you, staying on this subject to guardian angels that my granddad was so adamant about. I worked, up till 3 years ago, I'd been in the same job. I'd worked there for 38 years, from starting at 16-year-old. And we did move from an original factory in Chesterfield. We moved to an industrial estate up to a place called Elmwood, which is about five, six miles out of Chesterfield. And it's where it's built, the old industrial estate, not just the factory that they built for us, but the old industrial estate used to be Elmwood Colliery, the pit. And so it wasn't like virgin land or rough land that had never been built on. It actually was a pit yard and the mine workings and everything. Back when we first moved up there, the actual mine workings where the tower is and everything, that was still up. They'd not even took that down to build many more units at the time. So that's where we were situated. And pretty much from first couple of years of being up there, there were a lot of strange things. A lot of people, including myself, but a lot of people had seen figures and heard things that shouldn't have heard. A lot of strange happenings. I mean, one in particular, I was with a friend of mine. We used to make gas valves and regulators. That was our main line that we were on, me and a mate of mine. We'd been working away, and then it was mid-morning. It was something like 11 o'clock in the morning. So, and it was summertime as well. So everywhere was well lit. There were loads of people about. There were 40, 50 people on the shop floor milling around, getting on with the work and whatever. And where we were, me and this guy called Rob, we were working with, just across from us, the other side of the gangway, there was a big lad who wanted testers. He was built like a grizzly bear. He had 6 foot odd, huge build. And one of these guys, a grand lad, good worker. But if he decided he were having 5 minutes and a chat, that could quite easily turn into half an hour. And one of these guys, he couldn't stand, he got to be leaning on something as he's telling somebody a story or whatever he's doing. And quite often we'd see him standing there and we'd be shouting across and having banter with him, you know, and trying to jolly, come on, get on with your work and all this. And he had a tendency, he wouldn't do out at time, but later on that day, he got a chance, he'd grab you and he'd bear hug you. And my God, it come keen and all, it nearly broke my ribs a time or two. It were a swine for doing that. Anyway, this particular day, he'd had a particularly long conversation with somebody at Farsa. Me and Rob had been chatting at him and trying to jolly him along. Anyway, finally he moved and he went back to where he were doing. Anyway, we carrying on with his work. I'm stood in front of a test rig, loading a regulator in. Both hands on regulator, and I'm just dropping it into this test rig, and then you press a button and some clamps come across to clamp the regulator in before the air goes in to test this regulator. I just put the regulator in. I'm just about to press the button on the control panel, and out at the corner of my eye, I just seen this huge black figure. And straight away, I thought, that's Russell. He's coming. I can get ready. He's going to bear hug me. And I jumped back. And as I jumped, Rob were at side on me, and he jumped as well. And we looked, and it wasn't Russell at all. It was, well, I don't know what it was, but it was a big black shadow. And it's got to have been 6.5, 7 foot tall. And Rob just looked at me, and he colour had gone from his face, and he, what the hell was that? And did you see that, Rob? Yes, I saw it. And we're waiting for one another. Well, what did you see? So I said, what did you see? Rob says, no, you tell me what you saw. I says, to be honest, I thought it were Russell coming to bear hug me. I says, but it were a big, all I saw were outline of black. And he says, that's exactly what I saw. He says, but just look at the direction it's coming. It had come right through the body of the test rig itself. And then it had just disappeared. Now, like I say, this is 11 o'clock in the morning in a well-lit factory. Loads of people walking around. Nobody else saw anything, just me and Rob. But we both saw that as clear as day. And it scared the crap out on us, I can assure you of that. But that is the only time that working up there, all the things I've seen and heard, that's the only time that I can actually say I was scared. Other things have happened. I've heard castings being thrown around. There used to be a stillage right at the top of the shop where we used to make some little aluminium gas regulators, and used to store them in these like plastic stillages. And you know, it's like when you throw aluminium things, they like tink, and you can hear them tinking. I'm moving forward now a few years. I went on afternoons, and on afternoon shift there was only 3 or 4 of us on afternoons, and we all worked the bottom end of the factory. This stillage is right at the top end, and almost on a nightly basis, you could hear castings being, well, it just sounded like somebody were just sat on a chair just throwing castings into these stillages. And we'd go up, we'd take it in turns to go up, or two, a couple of us would go up. You couldn't see anything out of place. It was just these two stillages full of castings, and just as we'd seen them as we'd walked past, but you could hear it as clear as day. That's what were happening. Castings were being banged together or thrown or whatever, clear as day. And quite often as well, we used to sit down for our dinner time, which would be between 6 and half 6 in an evening. And quite often we all used to sit together at a little makeshift table, and you'd see shadow figures, if you want to call them that. You could certainly see movement in other areas of the factory. And we've all seen it, all four of us together and individually. We've all seen things moving around in shadows, and sometimes you can say, well, yeah, it's a trick at light, or it's this or it's that, but it's happened too often and it happened to too many people for it just to be that. But I've got to say that I never felt uneasy. I don't know whether it's in my mind I'm thinking, well, are these people that worked in the pit, when this used to be Homewood Colliery, I don't know. But they never seemed, it were more mischievous, like I say, with these castings and whatnot, just like having a laugh with people more than anything else. Anyway, I'll jump forward now to this next bit. This is on another occasion. There's only three of us on this particular shift. And again, I'm testing a regulator. This time it's a lot bigger one, and it's on a different test rig further up the shop. And I'm working on this test rig. It's a real big regulator, so I'm having to hold it in a crane, in a jib crane, to lower it down into the rig. And I'm working away on it, and I'm testing. I'm just opening some valves and putting some air into it. The other two guys, only two more, I could see them both. They were over to my right in the next bay, working on a big gas unit, working together on a big gas unit. I think we've all been like this. You all have that feeling that like somebody's sort of watching you or whatnot. And a weird feeling. And I looked round and there's nobody there. And I looked across and there were two guys. I could see them. They're only 50 yards away, just in next bay. I could see them both. Anyway, I'm sort of down on my knees and I'm looking. And we had to brush some salt water around it. Bottom half of this regulator to look for bubbles coming through to see it's not leaking through. And as I knelt down, I took a corner of my eye and I thought, is somebody sat on a bench? The benches used to come like into an L shape, and where they joined in the corner, I just knew there was somebody there. I'd sort of caught them half out of my eye. And I thought, right. And I looked around quick and I couldn't believe what I was seeing. There was a little figure. Probably, I don't know, 3-4 feet tall, maybe, like maybe a, I don't know, a 7-year-old child or whatever, I don't know. But his face, it was looking, could see expression on his face. It was that intent, as if to say, what on earth is he doing? He got a puzzled look on his face. He weren't looking at me, he was looking at what I was doing. And I could see that expression so clearly. And his face, I shut my eyes now. It was an old man's face, a very wrinkled face. But the thing is, it was his hair. His hair was it was almost glowing. It was so blonde. It was beyond blonde. It was almost as if it were being backlit. It really lit up. And then he looked and we made eye contact, and he was gone, just like that. And I thought, wow, okay. But again, although you could say, well, that's a really scary experience. I didn't feel scared. I knew what this spirit, ghost, whatever you want to call him, I knew what he was thinking. I could see the quizzical look on his face. He was trying to see what I was doing. I was testing this gas regulator. He's obviously no clue what it was and what I was doing. Anyway, I thought, right, I think it's time to go and make a cup of tea. So I went across and I shared it with other two lads, and we got one a Burko boiler type thing that just keeps boiling the hot water. Just stick your cup under and whatever, and we all had a drink. And I'm telling these two, expecting to get they'd just be taking Mickey out on me or whatnot, but there were none of that. They were really intrigued by it. And one guy in particular, Carl, he was a little bit on edge. I think he is a little bit. He's not one for ghosts and horror films and things like that at best of times. And he's asking more and more questions, and whereabouts was it and where did it go? And it's just gone, just like that. Anyway, nothing else happened that evening. In fact, nothing else happened for a week or two. And then this is where I'm getting round now to the gist of my story, this guardian angel. It's probably, I don't know, maybe 3, maybe 4 weeks later. I'm on afternoons again, so it had been a long old shift, and we were finishing at 10 o'clock. I'm almost certain it were a Thursday night. We used to finish half an hour earlier on last shift, so it must have been a Thursday night. And 10-15 minutes before we were due for knocking off for finishing, as per normal, I put all my tools away, wipe them down. Weekend's coming, I don't need them till Monday. And then met my way right to the top of the shop, past these stillages where these aluminium castings were and all like that. And you went through a door, down a corridor to washrooms and toilets and whatnot. So that's where I was heading to wash my hands. One little bit I have missed out is that at that time I didn't have a car. I used to have a motorbike. Obviously, like every other night, I'd gone on my motorbike. Anyway, I'm walking up the gangway towards the corridor to go and wash my hands. Unbelievably, who should be stood right outside the door where you go into the passageway, this same figure. I want to say it was a child because it just looked like a small child, but with an old man's face. Exactly the same. I could see the wrinkles on his face. He was dressed the same in workman's clothes, 40s, 50s, however. Quite scruffy looking, actually. But his hair was absolutely shocking blonde, the brightest colour you've ever seen. Like I say, it's almost like somebody was stood behind him shining a torch through it. It was almost illuminated. We made eye contact, and he didn't speak, didn't use his mouth to speak or anything to me, but in my mind, I heard, just said it like this, and it said, "Be careful on your bike, be careful on your bike," twice, just like that, quick, bang, gone. Figure completely disappeared. And it was so fast in my head. I thought, wow, okay. Anyway, I carried on. I suppose a lot of people would have stopped and thought, I'll not bother washing my hands tonight. But again, it wasn't like I felt threatened or scared at all. I must admit, going down the corridor and then opening the door into the washrooms, is it going to be stood there outside at sinks? But I went in and there was nobody there. I washed up, went to my locker, got me crash helmet and me coat and all my bits and bobs. Wandered down to the bottom end of the shop, and I used to bring me motorbike just inside the roller door, because we're on the car park at the back. It backed onto some open land, and there were a bit of a country walk type of thing. And I thought, well, you never know, anybody could see your bike and they could be off with it. So I used to just to bring it into bottom at shop and drop the roller door down. Anyway, I'm walking down with my helmet and my coat, and I got to the bottom, and the guy, one of the guys I was on after's with at the time, Brian, he was a paint sprayer. He was stood there, and I told him the story very just quickly. And much to my surprise, because again, he's one of these, although he had been on afters and we had heard bits and bobs and these castings clinking and whatnot, he was one of these guys who were like, well, it's something and nothing. You can always explain. But on this incident, I should say, just I'm putting my helmet on and to get on my bike, he just like pointed at me and he says, "Now, just think on tonight, Rich." He says, "Just be careful going home, because you never know whether you've got a guardian or whatnot, but just think on as you're going home, just take it steady." He says, "Right, okay, and see you on Monday, have a good weekend." Puts my helmet on, kicks my bike up. Boom, off. Now then, normally at that time of night going home, there's next to nothing on the roads. It's very, very quiet. And that's pretty much how it was for half the way home. But when you get halfway, I come to a little village. It's called Arkwright. Anybody who's from around this area will know the village, Arkwright. And basically, you've got, it's all on a hill, and it's a very steep hill. And this hill, it must be best part of half a mile from top to bottom. At the top of the hill, you've got a roundabout, and it gets steeper and steeper as you get to the bottom. And right at the bottom is a set of traffic lights because it joins onto another junction. As I'm going along, I just got to the top of the hill at Arkwright, went round the roundabout, and not a car or anything on the road at all. In fact, I'd seen nothing right up to that point. I went round the roundabout, and again, still on my side of the road, absolutely nothing. There was nothing. But coming up the hill, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Because normally at that time of night, there's nothing on the road. This night, it was bumper to bumper traffic. And not only that, they were crawling up the hill, literally as if, it's like you're on your way somewhere and you get stuck behind a tractor or wherever and you can't get past them. And everybody's crawling up, doing five mile an hour or whatever. And yet, there's not a car broke down on the roundabout. There's not been an accident. There's no tractors. There's nothing. It's just a row of cars and traffic. Oh, this is strange. Anyway, I'm going down. Now, I've got still got this voice in my head, be careful on your bike, careful on your bike. So what I've done normally, I'm sort of, I've got road to myself, I'm pretty much white lines in middle of the road. But this particular night, whatever, I've been checking my mirror even more than normal as before I got to this point. But again, so, and I was staying further in, more towards the curve, more towards the side of the road. And it's a damn good job I was, because I got about a third of the way down this hill. And then all of a sudden, this car, it just pulled out of the line of traffic. And it was only, I'd say, maybe 15, 20 yards in front of me. Whether they got fed up, a queuing in the traffic or whatever, I don't know. It pulled out, and I don't know if there was a man or a woman driving. I couldn't see any figure in the car. It just pulled out, and he just booted it. And he flew up that hill. And if I'd have been in my normal position, I wouldn't have stood a chance. It had just took me out and probably killed me, the speed they were doing. And I've told this story to one or two people and said, well, what kind of car were it? And, you know, I couldn't tell you. All I know was it was black. It was jet black. And it was quite small to the ground, like some kind of sports car or whatever. But as to put a make to it, no idea, but they flew. They absolutely flew. Now, like I say, I wouldn't have stood a chance. It was only a few yards, 10, 15 yards in front of where I was at that point on road. It just took me out, or she'd have took me out. Anyway, it did check me up, but like I say, I made it all the way back home safely. I got back home and parked my bike up. I went into the kitchen and took my helmet off, and wife had been in the kitchen waiting for me. She just got a kettle and made a cup of tea. And she says, my God, what's up with you? She says, you have got no colour at all. Anyway, I told her story, everything that had gone on, and she says, well, I can tell by your face. And I mean, I were shaking, literally shaking. She says, well, somebody's looking after you tonight. There's no doubt about that. And I do believe that whatever that ghost spirit, whatever you want to call it, I call it guardian angel, but that's just me. I don't know. It certainly planted a seed in my head, which made me act differently going home. I'd not have had that vision, or whatever you want to call it. I don't think I'd be here to tell the story. It's very, very strange, but that's the story really. So, I mean, a lot of people, you know, scared of ghosts and spirits and whatnot, and I've had some bad encounters, but I don't think all spirits or ghosts or whatever you want to call them are like that at all. I do believe that some are out there actually looking out for you. So that's that story.
Join me, George Norrie, for the Worldwide Contact in the Desert Virtual UFO Conference, June 25th to June 28th. Contact in the Desert is an epic weekend of adventure jam-packed with exciting explorations into UFOs, ancient civilizations, AI, crop circles, forbidden archaeology, disclosure, and the newest evidence of ongoing contact, sightings, and leading-edge science. This amazing weekend delivers more than 130 presentations and special events showcasing 67 speakers from all over the world, with 2 extra weeks to view your favorite leading experts, including Avi Loeb with Clyde Lewis, Linda Moulton Howe, Paul Hellyer, John Lear, Russell Targ, David Childress, Doc Wallach, and more. With breaking articles in the New York Times and acknowledged naval sightings, and more importantly, the new release of classified documents on the day of the soft opening of Contact in the Desert, we are your source for inside information. Join us June 25th at contactinthedesert.com to get your tickets today. Make contact, contactinthedesert.com.
I'm still staying with this subject, if I may, just for a minute, to do with guardian angels. An old lady, she lives next door, Barbara, she's a grand old lady, and she's very big into... She likes, we must have heard these stories where people say they see white feathers, and it's a sign from somebody who's passed or whatever. She was telling me one day that she don't think it is always that. She thinks it's a sign that is somebody looking after you and they're trying to tell you something. And she was telling me that sometimes she gets, when she's asleep or she's just nodding off, she'll get a voice in her head telling her something, and you must tell somebody this, or you must tell somebody to be careful about this, or you must tell somebody else something else. She's told me this story. She's one of these old ladies, if you're out doing anything in the garden, she'll shout you over edge, and once she's got you, and you can be stood a fair old while. So I have heard most of her stories quite a few times. But this one particular day, we were told that where I were, we were closing down. We'd been bought over by a big American company, and they were, even though we got a lot of work on, in fact, we got a full order book, they were going to close us down and move everything lock, stock and barrel to a big company in Germany. But they told us this in February and March, but we weren't actually closing until the back end of the year. So we'd sort of got it. You can look at it in two ways. It gives you plenty of time to look around for another job, or you can say you've got this hanging over you. And I looked at it as like, well, I've got plenty of time. I don't need to be searching around yet, but I must start at some stage. I've got to start looking for a job. Anyway, we found out, like I say, around about February, March time, they told us. And I'd not really done any job hunting or anything like that, I must admit. And I got talking to Barbara, the old lady from next door, and I was telling her all about it, about impending doom of losing his job. And I told her I was a bit worried because I'd been in that industry making gas valves and regulators and compressors and whatnot. 38 years, I'd done it from leaving school, and you've got to start from scratch again after all this time. What am I going to do? And she says, "Oh, don't you worry about that. You'll find another job. Don't you worry." So that's as far as conversation went. Anyway, probably as much as 2 months later, I just happened to be in the garden, and she appeared against the back door, and she's waving. I said, I want you a minute. She says, "I've got something to tell you." I says, "What's that, Barbara?" She says, "I had a visitor last night." She says, "And they told me that I must tell you when I see you. I must tell you, tell Rich to stop worrying. There's a job lined up for him, and it's going to be something to do with woodworking." I says, "Woodworking, Barbara?" She says, "Yes, that's the message." She says, "And here you go." And she passed me a white feather. She says, "This white feather was at the bottom of my bed this morning. And they leave," she says, "they leave these feathers to remind me to tell people. And as soon as I saw the feather, I remembered the message. And that's why I've been looking for you." She gave me this white, and I kept that white feather for a long, long time. I don't know what's happened to it now, but I did keep it for a long, long time. And I says, "Well, thanks for telling me, Barbara." I says, "But I don't know how this is going to pan out. I know very little about woodworking. It's not an hobby of mine or anything like that." But she says, "Well, I'm telling you, that's what they've told me." She says, "And they don't tell lies. They don't tell lies." Right? Okay. Well, thank you, Barbara. So anyway, we went into work. As I say, we were still working up at the same place, and we had some guys come in to help us. Telling us how you get back onto employment ladder, and people who've just lost their jobs and whatnot, and they were telling us that, you know, sign up with a job agency and they'll find jobs for you and all this sort of it. So I took all this bump away, all these pamphlets and whatnot, and amongst it there was a job agency, and they're quite local, only a couple of villages away. So I thought, well, I'll just give them a ring and see how it all pans out, because obviously I'd never been out of work from leaving school, so I didn't know how it all worked. Anyway, I went for an interview at this job agency, put my CV in and various papers and certificates from what I'd got and all that kind of stuff. And it says, "Well, when will you be available to work?" I says, "Well, I've still got about another 6 weeks left before I finish." She says, "Right, I'll mark it down here then, and we'll, if anything comes up, we'll give her a ring in 5 or 6 weeks' time." I says, "Right, okay then, thank you very much." So that was that. Anyway, these 6 weeks came and went, and next thing, we all made redundant. Anyway, I got a phone call from agency. It says, "Are you available to go for an interview?" And I says, "Well, yeah." She says, "Well, we've got a job come up here." She says, "It's I'll not say names at company and whatnot. I don't think it's fair to to do that. But she says, what's it to do? She says, oh, they make lathes and drilling machines and dust extraction units and whatnot. She says, it's not far from you. It's only a couple of miles from where you live. So she gave me all the details. Anyway, I had a quick look on the internet, do a little bit of research on what they actually did. I went for this interview and they showed me around and, well, I couldn't really believe it. Yeah, they made lathes and drilling machines and extraction. It weren't dust extraction, though. It's for woodworking. So it's for when you wood turning, it's for sucking all the dust and the wood chips and all like that, to that kind of stuff. And also they sell turning tools and basically anything you could wish to think about to do with woodworking. So I thought, right, well, and then we went in, after he'd shown me around, we went into the interview room. And you know what? I sat there and had the first job interview, my only job interview I'd had since 1979 when I'd left school. And I just felt so at ease and so relaxed, it was unbelievable. And I was sort of almost waiting for him to offer me the job. That's how, this can't be happening. He told me this 6 weeks ago, something to do with woodworking. I'd never heard of this company. All of a sudden, here I am being interviewed for a job to do with woodworking. Anyway, cutting a long story short, a few days later, I got a phone call and they offered me a job. So again, you know, you could say, well, coincidence, maybe it is, maybe it was coincidence, but I only went for that one interview and I got the job and it was to do with woodworking. So I don't know. You can read into it as you will, but that's exactly what happened. And now I've been there 3.5 years and we're going from strength to strength. And it's turned out to, although I was sad to get finished from my previous job and lose all my mates who I'd known for all them years, I've now got loads of new mates and everything's going great. So it just shows you. So again, is somebody up there looking after you? Have you got somebody watching over you? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. You know, some people believe it and some won't. So that's that. Another bit, this is the final bit really regarding guardian angels. We're getting finished from that job. I got some redundancy money. One of my ambitions in life, I've always wanted to go and see the Grand Canyon in America. I saw it on old Blue Peter television program when I was a kid, and I've been fascinated with it since. And I thought, one day I've got to go. And I thought, well, if there's ever a chance to go, you've got, you can call it free money, if you will, you've not got to save up, this might be the chance to just invest a few quid and actually go and do this for yourself. It's something you've always wanted to do. So cutting a long story short, myself and my wife and two friends of ours, we went on a 2-week holiday to America, and we spent some time in New York, and then we flew over to Las Vegas, and then from Vegas we went and we actually stayed a couple of nights at the Grand Canyon in a lodge. This particular day while we were there at the Grand Canyon, we'd split up, I had to have a knee replacement a few years ago, so I can't walk miles and miles, whereas our friends of ours, they a bit fitter than us. So they went off and they went heading down one of the paths in Tick Canyon. They didn't make it all the way to the bottom because it's a lot further than what you actually think when you get there. But so me and wife's just sort of walking along top. It was good enough for me. I've got all the fantastic views and loads of photographs and all this, that. Anyway, we're walking along. We'd visited, there's a Grand Canyon Railway, and it's a real old-fashioned thing. It's a real sight to see, with a station all made out of huge wooden beams and whatnot. It's absolutely fantastic. And we'd had an hour sat there, and we had a bite to eat, sat on platform at station. We watched these huge American trains coming in from God knows where, dropping people off for 2 or 3 hours to have a walk around canyon and then picking them back up later. Anyway, we walked up from there, and right at the top of there, we came across there was an hotel, and across from that, there was like a Native American, I don't know how to describe it. They were selling all Native American, well, all sorts, really. We called it the Opie House, which is the Opie Indians who lived around that, or around that south rim of the canyon, or around that area. So we thought, oh, we'll have a look in there. I thought, well, we might be able to get a, buy a T-shirt or whatnot. And I always like to get my wife a bit of jewellery from wherever we've been on holiday. I thought, well, there might be some Native American jewellery or what. I'm not a big jewellery fan myself. I don't tend to wear jewellery and stuff. But she likes her bracelets and her necklaces. And there might be some nice stuff in there. So we had a look, we had a wander around, and there were all sorts of stuff in there. You could get everything from a fridge magnet to a full Indian headdress, whatever you wanted, really, everything in between. Anyway, cutting a long story short, wife had been looking through the jewellery, and she'd picked a nice necklace out, and it was really a nice one. So I says, right. Anyway, the assistant came, can I help? He says, yeah, I think we're going to have that necklace there. She says, well, if you want me to put it behind the counter for you while you're looking around, I'll do that. I says, yeah, thank you very much. Carried on walking around and seen a T-shirt or whatever for myself. Like I say, I'm not really a jewellery person, but kept going back to this one particular case, this glass case, and full of all sorts of things, all sorts of trinkets. But there were one piece, and I just couldn't take my eyes off it, and it was an eagle, only quite small, an eagle with its wings outstretched, the centre of the body of it, like a very shiny orange, some kind of stone, really highly polished. I kept looking at it, and I'm trying to see how, not labelled to see how much it is. So I'm a bit of a skimflint. So I'm looking, trying to see the price, can't quite see it. And I walked away from it, and I thought, well, however nice it is, it looks very expensive, so I'll not be buying it anyway. So I walked away from it, and I'm looking at I couldn't get this out of my mind, and I must have gone back to that glass case about, I don't know, four or five times. And eventually, my wife, Lisa, she says, why don't you just ask assistant how much it is and have a closer look? So anyway, she came over and said, could I just have a look at that eagle? So she undid the cabinet and took it out. And straight first thing I looked at with price tag, and $70 or whatever it was, something like that, which was a lot cheaper. I thought this is going to be $100 or whatever at least. I had a look at it and I thought, I really like that. And she says, no, you must have it. You keep going back to it. And I says, I'll have that. I will. I'll take it. So she says, right. So we went back to the counter to pay. And she says, well, isn't that strange? The lady on the till, she says, isn't that strange? She says, your wife's picked this. Most of the stuff in the shop, it's all done by the Hopi Indians. She says, but we do have bits and bobs from other tribes. She says, but the necklace your wife's picked is Navajo. She says, so is that eagle that you've picked there. She says, and that's the only piece of Navajo jewellery in that case. Everything else in that case is Hopi Indian jewellery. That's the only one piece of Navajo Indian. As soon as she said Navajo, straight away I'm back in 1971 thinking about my granddad and this guardian angel that he said was a Native American Indian, a Navajo, and me asking, what's a Navajo? I didn't know what a Navajo was. Never heard of a Navajo. This is incredible. So again, we've sort of come full circle here from where I started my story with Navajo Indians to me buying this piece of jewellery, which was a Navajo thing. And I've got it on now. It's on my chain now. In fact, very rarely do I take it off. One of my granddaughters, Lily, she's 3 years old. She's absolutely fascinated with it. She'll come and get on Minnie, and straight away she's got to get this chain and she's got to be messing with this eagle. She's absolutely fascinated with it. She's determined, and anything happens to me, she's having that. She's already claimed that, even though she's only three. But yeah, so very, very, very strange. Very strange. But or is it? Is it just that's your life? Is that my granddad or my granddad's guardian angel that's still sort of looking after the family, even after all this time? I don't know. So that's really my stories regarding guardian angels.
Wonderful, Rich. I think a lot of listeners would agree that's, you're definitely being watched over. You were drawn to that jewellery.
Yeah, I couldn't leave it alone. Like I say, I'd walked away from it so many times, more worried about the price, I think, than anything else. But to go by, then for her to tell me that there were only one piece of Navajo jewellery in that case, and it was quite a biggish case, there were loads of stuff. that was the piece that I were drawn to. It's weird, Nick, but, you know, it's a gospel truth story, and that's it.
You know, what did your granddad tell your father? He said, mark my words.
Yes, he did, yeah. That's exactly. He says, I will prove to you, you know, there is something more. You stand there and laugh and say there's no such thing as ghosts and spirits and guardian angels. One of these days I'll prove to you. And I think really it's proved to me dad, and then it's proved to me as well, hasn't he? You know, so although I didn't really need proving to it, I'm being truthful and the stuff that I have seen over years.
He did just that. And when, you know, Derek, was it Derek? When Derek says...
Oh, yes, on the market, yeah.
Yeah, when he said he think he saw him, I mean, yeah, you know, you're right. He could have misidentified him and thought he was someone else, but your granddad had told him that he'd moved down to this old people's flat and all, and that's information he wouldn't know, isn't it?
He would have no clue. Like I say, he said, it, you know, it's the first time I've seen either on you for, you know, 3 years, 4 years, and then to see you both in space for a week. Now, I don't know. To me, that's too much of a coincidence. And like I say, this guy, it's not like he didn't know who my granddad was. You know, he'd grown up with my dad. He knew my granddad. He knew him very, very well. So he wouldn't mistake him. You know, so I think he was just trying to, you know, with my dad saying, no, we've lost him, he's passed away. I think he got a little bit embarrassed about it. But I don't know. I don't think there any need to be embarrassed. I think he did see my granddad, if truth be known. And I think deep down, although he never said it to me, and my dad never said this, but I think my dad knew that it was his dad, you know, that had come back and just proving to him that, you know, there's more you think there is out there.
Yeah, certainly convinced him. I'd imagine Derek probably went home and probably said to his wife, no, you know, I definitely did see him. Definitely saw him. It was definitely him.
Yeah, I'm 100% sure that's what happened, yeah.
Guardian angel definitely looking out for you on your bike. And yeah, you getting that little heads up made you a little bit more cautious, you know, looking in your mirror. And it just about saved your life, that did.
I'm under no illusions whatsoever. If that little seed hadn't been planted in my head, I'd have just been going down middle of road in my normal spot as I normally would at that time of night. And there's no way that car could have missed me. There were no time to react. I made no attempt to swerve from where I were, because that car were on me and past me before, you could react. And the way they flew out from there, it's just astonishing, you know. And there's no doubt about it. Whatever that was, whether it's a spirit, a ghost, a guardian angel, whatever you want to call it, and whether it's looking after me or whether it's something belonging to the old pit or whatever, I have no clue. But without that, those little seeds being planted, I do honestly believe that I wouldn't be here, 100%.
We wouldn't be having this conversation now.
No, we wouldn't. No, that is a fact, no.
Well, we're all very glad, you know, you are. Interesting. You know, I think a lot of our listeners can certainly relate to a lot of these accounts. You know, it's also reassuring to know, you know, we're kind of being watched after, you know, especially by loved ones that have passed.
Yeah, that's how I feel. Like I said, apart from that thing that made us jump, that big black shadow, apart from that, all the incidents that I've seen when I were up at the old place where I worked, I never felt really scared or on edge. It were almost like, yeah, there's some castings and some noises. They're just messing around. They don't mean anything. And then, like I say, the first time I saw him, I could see the expression on his face. I knew what were in that spirit's mind. They were looking to see what I was doing. There was such an inquisitive look on the face that you could see, what on earth is that guy doing there? I have no clue what that is hanging in that crane, and I've no idea what he's doing. That's all in a split second, but it was in his face as clear as anything. The thing was, Nick, was the air. It was almost like that it was backlit. It was so bright, it was beyond blonde. And I couldn't even tell you now. I'm trying to rack my brains like for a hairstyle. They don't seem to be a hairstyle. It's just so bright on the top of the head, like blonde hair, but I couldn't tell if it was, it certainly weren't long because it was just around the top of the head. But what kind of style, I couldn't say. It was just so bright to look at. Now, again, the more I think about it, I'm thinking about this morning before, you know, we spoke, and I thought, well, actually, was it hair on his head? Is it I don't want to call it a halo or anything, but is it something more spiritual, a light or whatever, rather than it being air? Because it were almost as if it were glowing. But in my mind, it's very bright blonde air. But maybe it wasn't. I don't know. Very strange. But in both occasions, the first time when I were watching my testing the valve and the second time when I were going to wash off, that was the most stunning thing or the most rememberable thing about the encounter was the brightness of the hair on the top of the head. Incredible. You know, I can see that as clear as day. I can't make out an hairstyle. Very strange, but that's how it is.
You know, I reckon that, you know, a lot of these places of work, you know, a lot of these old boys, you know, they probably spent their whole lives working. You know, they left school, went straight into a job, you know, and they probably didn't even pass. You know, they didn't probably pass over in the factory, passed over somewhere else. But because they spent, you know, day in, day out, you know, they're comfortable and they probably just went back there, you know. And
possibly. Yeah, possibly.
Yeah, that's the way I look at it.
Yeah. Or it could be, like I say, it was a colliery pit. I mean, going back, I mean, it shut many, many years ago. But I can only imagine that safety standards back in collieries and pits back in them days wouldn't have been very good, I wouldn't have thought. So maybe it is somebody that's lost their life there or wherever. I don't know. I honestly don't know. But whatever the reason, I am 100% grateful for the fact that they did what they did. And whether they lost their lives there or not, maybe if they had and they didn't want to see anybody else lose their life, I don't know. But anyway, I'm glad they did what they did.
Keeping an eye on their co-workers.
Yes, that's right.
Interesting stuff. Okay. You were also saying at the very beginning of the show that you'd seen some strange lights in the sky as well, Rich.
I did, yeah. That was, let me have a think, that would be around about mid-80s, 80, I don't know, 86, 87-ish. That was, came out where I used to live before, again, at the same little village, Newbold, where I lived. My sister, she lived dead across from us, the other side of the road, and she had two little... Jack Russell dogs, little yappy things they were. Well, she used to say to me, if you're ever having any meat for your tea and there's anything left over, or if you have a pork chop or a lamb chop or something, will you save bones for dogs? So I says, yeah, of course we will. And we'd done this quite a few times. This particular night, we'd had pork chops, lamb chops or whatever. And there were some bones and whatnot left over. So I'll just nip these over to my sister's, and it'd be 6 o'clock tea time, maybe just after. And I came out of the house. I couldn't believe where I was looking at. Right above my sister's house. Well, right above. It sounds like it were hovering above a roof. It wasn't. It were right up in the sky. There was a red light in the sky, and from my position, I'd say as I looked up in the sky, you could see, and it was a clear night. You could see the stars out and everything. This red light was three or four times the size of any star in the sky, still quite small because it was very high up. I just stood at gate and I'm just looking at it, and I'm waiting for it to flash and move because it must be a plane or an helicopter or whatever, but there was no aeroplane sound in the sky or helicopter or anything, and it's just in the same spot. And I thought, well, it can't be a star or anything. It's not moving. And I thought, and again, it's not Mars or anything like that, because it was too bright. It was really glowing. Also, from where I was stood, I looked over to my left-hand side. Right, you can see for miles and miles and miles, because where we used to live, we were on top of an hill. And you can see for miles and miles, right on the top of a next set of hills, which has got to be 5, 6, 7 miles away maybe from where we are. There's a television mast for local TV. It's called Unston, the name of the place, and it's Unston TV mast. And right on the top of this TV mast is a little red light, as they all have. And I looked across and I'm sort of taking a double take, thinking, is this a reflection off some clouds or something? And I can see, but I'm looking at the light above my sister's, and it's 2 or 3, 4 times the size of the light on the Unston TV mast, of which I can see right over in the distance. So I'm stood there with a dish of bones in my hand, thinking, well, what on earth is it? And all of a sudden, it just went shoom, and it absolutely flew, and it heading out towards that way, towards where the TV mast is. Maybe not quite straight at it, off in a little bit of an angle, but heading that way. But it wasn't going that fast. Like I've heard a lot of, even on your show, where people have said it's just gone boom and it were gone. It wasn't like that. It was fast, but it was there long enough to watch it. And I bet I watched it for probably 10, 15, maybe 20 seconds before it disappeared out of view. And it didn't fade in or fade out or just disappear. It's just that it went that far. It sort of disappeared over the horizon. Now, I've not got a clue what that was. That's it. It's not like a scary story and saw beams of light coming down. It was just a single red light, but it just went at that speed, and I'm just watching it disappearing off into horizon. Like I say, I stood and watched it for like 15, 20 seconds until it just disappeared over the horizon. There was just that point for about, I don't know, 4 or 5 seconds where I got both the TV mast and the object, whatever it was, both in my view. I could see them both. The object was quite a bit higher than the TV mast and sort of heading away from it. But there was just that, like I say, for 4 or 5 seconds where they were both, I was looking directly at them and I could see them both. And then this object just, and it were gone into distance and disappeared. Now, what on earth that was, Nick, I have no clue, but no sound. It certainly, to go like, I mean, I'd watched aeroplanes and whatnot go over, and it is we do seem regular going over that way, but they've always got that flashing light on them going on and off. And you can watch them for 10 minutes before they go out of sight sometimes going over there. This were gone in, like I say, in space of 15 seconds, something like that. So it certainly weren't an aeroplane or an helicopter. No, an helicopter had heard the noise and whatever. Well, you would with a plane. So very, very strange. I am very intrigued by UFOs and all this kind of stuff, but that's the only time I can say that I've had an actual encounter myself, as much as it was. It was a light. I can't say it was a craft or anything like that. It was just a red light. But it were very, very strange. But I'll just finish the story off by saying I went across to my sister's. Never used to bother tapping up door. Because we're in and out of each other's houses all the time. Just went into her kitchen and I said, I brought some bones for dogs and I put them outside. And my sister, knowing that I've always been a bit intrigued by UFOs, she says, oh, come here, so you've just missed this thing. And well, we're in North Derbyshire and Yorkshire, our local TV station, the ITV one. We used to have a programme on at tea time called Calendar with all the local news and whatnot. And she says, there's been some reports of some UFOs in Leeds and Wakefield and around that area, which is only 40 mile up road from us. She says, they've had no end of sightings today. I said, well, I can't believe this. And I told her exactly what I'd seen. She says, oh, bloody hell. She says, I hope they don't come round here, landing round here. She was a bit on edge about it. So a bit ironic. Again, is it a coincidence? Is that connected or maybe not? I don't know. But it seems a bit strange that there'd been some sightings all around Yorkshire area and whatnot, then I've seen this strange light in the sky. So yeah, that's my one and only UFO. Yeah, one and only UFO story, yeah.
Yeah, so you just came from outside after seeing this light in the sky, and then she goes and tells you this. That whole area has always been active, you know, especially in the 80s, as you know. And the light was just there. It was completely immobile.
Yeah, it never moved. It was just stood in the sky. It was quite bright, quite a bright red light, brighter than the TV mast that I could see over to the left-hand side, yeah. And I'm sort of like taking a double take. I must have been stood there. I'd say a good 30 seconds, maybe longer, maybe a minute. I just stood at my gate before I went down steps to Cross Road. And I'm just looking from one to other. And it never moved. And I looked at TV mast, back to light. And I'm just in my head thinking, well, what is it? And then all of a sudden it didn't sort of wind up and start going. It just went from nothing and it was going at full speed. And it never altered from that speed. It just went off in that direction. So not a clue where it is. No noise, no sound, nothing. Just this light. And thinking back now, the light never seemed to change either. It never got any dimmer as it went off into the distance. It weren't like it got any dimmer. It stayed just as bright as it did when it were above me sister's house. So that's a strange thing as well. Sometimes things are going away into distance, they become less bright and whatever, don't they? But this didn't it. It seemed to stay the same. The luminosity of it seemed to be the same as I lost sight of it right over on the horizon as it was when I was looking at it, stood at my own gate. Very strange.
Interesting stuff. I mean, yeah, I can see where those towers, I've got one not far from me. I can see it on top of the hill. Yeah, very strange. Very strange. Yeah. And it was directly above you in the zenith. So, you know, unless you're at the very base of a hill, you wouldn't really be looking at a telephone tower.
No, it definitely wasn't. It wasn't the telephone tower. No, like I say, I just had that for a few seconds, maybe 4 or 5 seconds, where I was looking directly at both of them. I could see them both. The TV mast was in quite low down in comparison to where this light was. It was a lot higher up, the light, as it went over towards it. It didn't go directly over it. It went past it over the right-hand side, heading over towards, from looking from where I was at Newbold, looking over towards Sheffield and that way. So definitely heading Sheffield Leeds way, you could say. Yeah.
Yeah, I can say masts don't fly in any case. So, yeah, good stuff. I really appreciate you coming on today, Rich. That's interesting. Really interesting encounters.
Yeah, I've enjoyed every minute on it, Nick. Thank you very much for having me.
Good stuff. All right, you enjoy the rest of your evening, Rich, all right?
Okay, mate. Thank you very much.
No worries. Take care, Rich. That's all for today. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com or reach out to me via the contact page on my website at ufochroniclespodcast.com. Big thank you to Rich for sharing tonight, and thank you for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.